Achtung!
Ja,
stay 60 feet
Ja, moet je blijven. Heb je gezien? Ja, dat is
your Macintosh.
Sit down.
I ask you all to have 1 minute of silence for our beloved friend Bill Gates, who is deceased. So please, 1 minute of silence. Okay, thank you.
Long years, Bill! left!
Who
left!
Left!
Who works left?
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 A few practical remarks. The water session. A few practical remarks. The loft session is starting in the big tent, which we don't want people to be late for. And also, please consider, if you can, to still camp here on Monday or even leave on Tuesday evening, because we still need about 50 to 100 volunteers to be here on Monday and Tuesday to help us clear out this entire campsite. So if you can, if you have a few extra days, there's dinner for everybody here on Monday that's helping us volunteer. So please consider staying here for Monday or Tuesday. That's all. For now.
Dat is wel een heel mooie graf eigenlijk, hè? Ja. Een mooie steen. Ja.
Did he jump or was he going?
It's hard to say.
Wow, there are some flowers.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you for being with us today on Full Logical Verse. I'm your host, Mike Thornton, and today our guest is Stephen Benifer of Free Radio Berkeley. Stephen, thank you for being with us on the program.
Very good. Thank you for inviting me on.
Well, there has been a recent development in your court case, in your battle with the FCC, and I'd like us to get to that in a moment. But first, if you will, for those people who don't know about Free Radio Berkeley and the micro-power radio movement, can you talk a little bit about that?
Free Radio Berkeley itself was put on the air on April 11th of 1993. That was the first inaugural broadcast. It was done as a free speech statement and as a challenge to the FCC's regulatory policies, which in essence preclude all but the wealthy from having a voice. And that is the whole purpose of the micropower broadcasting movement, is to enable communities to have their own small, low-power FM stations so those communities can be empowered with their own voices. And that's been the original intent and purpose ever since the very beginning of this entire project.
And there certainly are a number of small micro-power broadcasters across the United States, in fact, around the world, correct?
That's correct. I mean, we are working actively in other countries such as Haiti, Mexico, El Salvador, and several other places to help people there develop grassroots community radio stations.
Part of the problem in all of this is that we do have a governmental regulatory agency the Federal Communications Commission that seems to believe, and in particular, in your case individually, has taken you to court, as well, may I add, as other people, but you have been a major focal point of the FCC's attempt to shut down these low-power radio stations, which they refer to as pirate radio stations. Can you talk about some of the history of that? I mean, and why do they seem to feel that they have the right to do that?
Well, one has to look at the situation historically. By that I mean going all the way back to the founding of the FCC within the structure of the 1934 Communications Act. It's my firm belief that they wanted the means of communication at that time, principally, you know, radio, to be placed in trusted corporate hands, or at least placed in hands that would not be really opposed to the status quo. You know, prior to that, there were many, it was a little bit of a jumble as far as, you know, who was on the air and so forth. But prior to that act being put in place, you had labor unions, you had, you know, community groups, various people were doing their own radio stations. You know, I firmly believe, as I said, that it was the intent of the government to make sure that radio did not fall into the wrong hands. I mean, you can imagine, you know, later on, you know, a couple of years later in the 30s, when the labor movement strikes and takeovers of plants and sit-downs and all that were reaching a peak. Of course, the Flint strike, and I mean, one can imagine if there had been strong voices on the air behind that type of labor movement, just for example.
And the FCC over the years has increased its stranglehold by increasing the amount of money that one must pay in order to get a, quote, license to broadcast, correct?
Right. The license itself is not the most expensive component. I mean, it's part of the fees. But essentially, they've created a regulatory structure that requires an incredible amount of money to comply with, you know, with consultants and, you know, inside the Beltway, FCC-related attorneys, yada, yada, yada. Basically, they've raised the barriers on this so high that none but the wealthy can participate in the process. And we have maintained and continue to assert that this is unconstitutional, that it's a violation of equal protection under the law, that the FCC regulatory structure in regards to the First Amendment, free speech, is unconstitutional because one has to pass the least restricted means test. In other words, that if the government is going to regulate free speech activity, it has to restrict it in the least means possible. And we firmly believe that their structure is not the least restricted means possible, and therefore is inherently unconstitutional. The FCC is supposedly mandated by Congress as an agent of the people to act in the public interest, need, necessity, and convenience. And they've done exactly the opposite. They basically have turned the airwaves into a concession stand for corporate America, who I consider to be the real pirates. I mean, basically, they have, you know, stolen yet another people's resource, just like the commons were stolen in the 1500s in England, and offenses were put up, and no trespassing signs were attached. That's exactly the same situation we have today. They have fenced off the airwaves and put up signs, no trespassing, only the wealthy corporate elite allowed. And it's our opinion that those fences should be ripped down and those signs ground into the mud, basically. It's an intolerable situation that communities cannot have their own voice, that the average person in this country does not have access to the airwaves. And we have shown through micropower broadcasting that it's very possible for every community who chooses to do so to have its own voice for a cost of $1,500 or less, maybe more if you really splurge on audio equipment, whatever. But it's a very inexpensive proposition. But the FCC, acting to protect the interests of the status quo of corporate broadcast media monopolies, has essentially made the process so intolerable that only, again, as I say, only those that are well endowed can take part.
Free speech is hardly free speech if it takes you hundreds of thousands of dollars in order to even try to exercise it.
That's correct. We feel there's a way that this can, you know, all of this can be accommodated, but the FCC is unwilling to do this because, quite frankly, the government has major tremor spasms when real democracy starts happening in any given situation. They believe in a democracy which is only really, at its very essence, a consensus among the elite. It has nothing to do with true grassroots democracy at all. And that's what we're all about here. That we want real grassroots democracy. We want the average person to have access to their ways. We want people to engage each other from different points of view so that we can really, you know, come together as communities in a meaningful way and really recognize who our real enemies are and how we can come together to fight and organize and develop alternative strategies for real viable communities.
We're talking with Stephen Denifer of Free Radio Berkeley. My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. Stephen, let me ask you, because of course you have been the focal point of a major FCC case, and people who have listened to this program before have heard our conversations with Napoleon Williams, who has been attacked in a very, very different way, but nevertheless both of you have had to face the wrath of government officials. Let's, if we will, talk about your case, but first, I read a letter that you were the primary drafter of, though I believe you had input from other people, regarding a response to a call that was made by the National Association of Broadcasters at a meeting that they had earlier this year. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Apparently the NAB, who I think is the real moving party in this whole affair, ultimately, has basically urged its members, which include most of the large corporate-owned broadcast stations and all of the commercial stations, basically to go on a seek-and-destroy mission regarding micropower broadcasters. Basically, they've asked their people to report all unlicensed activity in their areas to the FCC and basically try to make life as difficult as possible for these micropower broadcasting communities.
These are the very same people, though, who, when you see them in public, are talking about freedom of speech and freedom of the press, but yet in their private meetings, they're calling for something very different, it appears.
This is true. Well, no one ever said hypocrisy was in short supply in this society.
Well, I think we can agree on that. You And like I said, I believe you were the primary drafter of a letter of response to the NAB. Can you talk about that? Because what I saw was, I think, a very strong counter to their plan and action of attempting to shut down micropower broadcasters.
Mm-hmm. Well, the NAB is not, I mean, they're not versed in their, you know, street tactics, let's say. We feel that if they want to attack us, we will have no choice but to fight back in the ways that we're familiar with, and those being organizing our communities to boycott those radio stations that so choose to try to stomp on local micro broadcasters. We will urge boycotts of advertisers. We'll urge people to actually go to the doorstep of businesses that advertise on these radio stations and basically put them to the question of, do you really support the Constitution of the United States, the principles of free speech, democratic communication, and grassroots democracy, and let them make the choice as to whether they want to advertise on a station that obviously wishes to squelch free speech activity, squelch the voice of the average person. And, you know, that's a choice those businesses will have to make.
As I understand it, the FCC, after the National Association of Broadcasters' call to go out on a seek and destroy mission, as you put it, has been actively now attempting to close down every micropower broadcaster they can find all across the country. As I said a little earlier in this discussion, Napoleon Williams has been a major focal point as well, with authorities in Illinois breaking into his home and taking his children, and now his wife is in prison and he's been harassed using a lot of legal means there. You've been in court in battle with the FCC. Can you talk about your case and your battle with them in the courts?
Yes, the whole court process began not too long after Free Radio Berkeley went on the air on April 11th, 1993. We came to the attention of the FCC shortly thereafterwards, and they tried to intimidate me with a $20,000 notice of apparent liability, saying that, you know, I owed them $20,000 for making alleged illegal broadcasts. And our legal people were all ready to roll. This is something we had prepared for from the start. And we began a series of letter communications with them stating why, you know, we basically said apparently not, as far as the file was concerned, and explained our legal reasons why. We went round and round with them for approximately a year. They had stonewalled us on our appeal, and they decided they would try to take us to court. They, in October of 1994, filed a motion for a preliminary injunction against myself to shut the station down. And after the usual exchange of a brief and counter response and yada yada yada, we ended up in federal court on January 20th of 1995 before federal judge Claudia Wilkin, who heard oral arguments from both sides. And it was quite an amusing process to see this pompous windbag from the FCC purporting to be an attorney do his act in the courtroom. And she made it very clear almost from the start that she was going to not grant them what they wanted. And he was totally astounded by this. He was spouting off about irreparable harm and, you know, judge, I don't know what a can of worms you're opening here, and there'll be chaos and anarchy on the airwaves. And as far as I was concerned, you know, anarchy, yes, chaos, well, that's the current situation. She basically based her decision on unconstitutional issues we'd raised. She actually offered them to respond to this issue, and they finally drug her feet and came up with a response in August of that year. It was a very weak response, about two sentences in a paragraph of 13 pages of basically nonsense. Then they came back again. Since the civil action, they filed a motion for summary judgment for a permanent injunction. They, of course, don't want a trial on this. They want to bypass the trial phase by going for summary judgment, which, as a moving party, if they feel enough facts established, that they can, you know, maybe get. At any rate, we finally, after much delay, had a hearing on that motion on the 12th of April of 1996. At that time, after hearing both sides, Judge Claudia Wilkin said that she would take it under advisement and issue a ruling later. Well, that later turned out to be 1 year and 30 weeks later, Wednesday of this last, you know, few days, where she issued a ruling saying that she was denying their motion for summary judgment without prejudice, being it was still open for consideration, but for the moment it was not an issue, and that she affirmed that she had jurisdiction in this matter, despite the FCC's claims she didn't, and that she further ordered the FCC to respond within 14 days with a brief on the constitutional issues that she raised, those being the question One, is it okay for a federal agency to enforce unconstitutional rules or regulations, and to respond to our defense that we feel that it's adequate defense that we should be able to operate in our current situation, even though we're not licensed, because the regulatory structure is unconstitutional.
We're talking with Stephen Denifer of Free Radio Berkeley. My name is Mike Thornton. This is Full Logic Reverse. Stephen, this is really the crux of why we're having you on the program today. And that is, as not being a legal scholar myself by any means, it appears to me that inherent in Judge Wilkins' ruling is that the very ability for the FCC to regulate broadcasting in any way is now on the block to be discussed and challenged, correct?
That's correct.
And if the FCC is found to be in violation of the Constitution, its regulations in violation of the constitutional protection for free speech, they will no longer be able to control who has access to the airwaves.
Yeah, it'll create a major wrench in the process.
How do you see this manifesting itself if indeed they are found to be, the FCC is found to be an unconstitutional regulatory body?
Well, after she gets all the paperwork from both sides in this current, after this current order, she'll make some sort of decision. We most likely should deny finally the motion for summary judgment, rule in our favor, and make some statement about that she believes that the regulatory structure is unconstitutional. That's what we anticipate. And at that point, she would then order the issue to trial, at which point we expect the FCC to appeal.
Certainly, I can foresee this being a case that will work its way to the Supreme Court. Do you agree?
Yes, I figure about the year 2002 or something.
That I would think that the possibility would exist that if this goes forward in the way it appears to be going forward now, there could be some sort of injunction filed that would allow micropower broadcasters to legally broadcast while this case is being decided.
We are examining the possibility of a class action on behalf of every microbroadcaster to enjoin the FCC from equipment seizures and forfeiture orders. We're looking at it. I mean, it's going to be a tricky one, but we are considering it.
In addition to your operation of Free Radio Berkeley, you also are a person who helps people gain equipment and teaches them how to set up equipment so they can develop their own community micropower radio station, correct?
That is correct. We have a separate operation, which is essentially, well, has several component parts. One, it's a electronics research, design, manufacturing, and sales operation, which provides the kits and other equipment necessary to set up a micropower broadcasting station. Essentially, we're sort of a one-stop shop in that respect. In addition to the media outreach we're doing, the organizing work internationally, etc., that's the other phase of this. We actually have formed a separate organization. The radio station now is formally Free Radio Berkeley Foundation, and the other operation is Free Radio Berkeley IRATE, which stands for International Radio Action Training Education. And so we're running an informal apprenticing program right now. People want to learn about how to do this kind of work, how to build the transmitters, put kits together, all that sort of thing. People can come and work in our shop as a volunteer and help us, you know, keep the operation going. We provide training for people from other countries who have come to visit and stay for 2 or 3 weeks to learn about this as well. We hope to formalize this a bit more and into fully developed programs within the next 6 months to a year. We're just going full ahead with this, and we're seeing dramatic results, like in Haiti, where we've helped set up stations there. I mean, these stations are having an incredible impact on the communities. I don't know how to begin to describe the situation in Haiti. I mean, it's just really, I don't don't think people have any, there's hardly a referential point most people would really understand.
Awful, I think, would sum it up.
But I mean, the last thing that, you know, many people expect would be these peasant organizations and peasant communities that have their own radio stations, but they do now. And we're working to expand that as fast as we can. You know, radio is an extremely powerful medium. And we really want to bring it back to the community where it belongs. Particularly from my own point of view, it really can be summarized very simply. If you can't communicate, you can't organize. If you can't organize, you can't fight back.
We're talking with Stephen Dunifer of Free Radio Berkeley. Stephen, if people wanted to get more information about what you're involved with and micropower in general, how would they go about doing that?
Okay, there are a number of ways. And also, I'd like to inform people that myself and my associate, Ron Sokolsky, have just finished authoring a book. It's a compendium, anthology, and original work called Seizing the Airwaves. That'll be out in a month or so. If people want to get in touch with us about how to receive any information on setting up micropower stations, first we have a voicemail number, which is area code 510-464-3041. Repeat, 464-3041 in the 510 area code. We have a website, which is www.freeradio.org. www.freeradio.org. And it has links to other sites. We have a legal website that can be linked to from our page or directly accessed at www.surf.com/tilde, that little side squiggly sign, Graham, G-R-A-H-A-M. And people can request the information packet via email by sending info request to FRBSPD. That stands for Free Radio Berkeley, Stephen Paul Dunifer, FRBSPD at CRL.com. People also can mail us at Free Radio Berkeley, 1442A Walnut Street, number 406, Berkeley, 94709.
Certainly a number of ways to get in contact to get more information about micropower and what you're doing with Free Radio Berkeley and Free Radio Berkeley Irate. Any thoughts you'd like to leave our listeners with about any of this?
Well, I'd just like to urge people to consider supporting and help develop this any way they can. If they are working in solidarity with other communities outside the United States, to see if those communities could be aided by having their own radio stations, or, you know, whatever. If they know friends in other part of the country, they could be, you know, communities that could use it, or whatever. I mean, just any way that we can do to spread the word about this. You know, I think we've already won the battle in the court of public opinion, I think, squarely. And it's just a matter of informing more people, because everyone wants to have a voice. It's very important for everyone to have a voice. Particularly youth and people who are just totally shut out of the process entirely. So it really comes down to a fundamental issue of constitutional free speech rights and human rights. That's what we're all fighting for.
Stephen Dunifer of Free Radio Berkeley, thank you for being with us on the program today.
Thank you for inviting me.